You're listening to WTUL New Orleans. This is the News and View Show, and you're here with DJ Under the Bus. And today we have a special guest, Sarita Stide Martin, who I met at a welcome table event last week, Sunday actually. It was the screening of the film The House I Live In, which documents the history of the really how we ended up in a situation where we over-incarcerate, and especially people of color who have been unequally targeted in the system since the beginning of the drug wars, and also how various laws evolved to stifle different populations, not because of drugs, but because of maybe, you know, the powers that be not wanting a group of people to get more economic power or more power in general. And so the fear of maybe minority groups sort of overtaking the power structure the way that it's evolved, and what can we do to level the playing field. And this is an initiative that was started by the mayor's office, I think, a couple of years ago. I think it's funded by the Winter Foundation and maybe a couple of other foundations now. But you were there tabling to bring awareness and attention to an organization that you began as executive director, Operation Restoration, to help incarcerated women and girls, I suppose, juveniles, yes, transition back into communities. So why don't you tell listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you arrived in New Orleans, and what inspired you to begin this organization?
Oh, well, good afternoon. I wanted to show you my appreciation for giving me this opportunity to come on the station today and speak. I had a humble beginning. I'm from Vastry, Louisiana, a small country town in St. James Parish. I grew up there. At about 18, I got a scholarship to Xavier University, and that was my first introduction into living in Louisiana, well, New Orleans, Louisiana. I had a scholarship for physics and engineering, and I went there. I attended Xavier maybe about 2 semesters. I joined the military at 19, and I went to Great Lakes, Illinois, to begin my journey in the Navy. While enlisted in the military, I got in trouble, and at the age of 19, I was sentenced to 120 months in federal prison, 3 years probation, 20 years in the state of Texas to be ran concurrently, and $1.9 million in restitution was my charge at 19. So that began a journey where my life, you know, started to change. After, I guess, being incarcerated about 5 years, I had, I guess everyone calls these epiphanies, where I made a decision, a conscious decision, and I said that I needed to change, and I absolutely could not return back into society the same way that I came in. I was fortunate enough at that time that at Tallahassee Community College, came onto the grounds at the Tallahassee prison, and they taught college classes. So I began taking college classes again, and I did very well. I amassed 30 hours, and I think my GPA was right at around 3.875 in my 30 classes, and I was released. And the first thing, of course, I wanted to do was come back to New Orleans and start school again to continue my aspirations to obtain a degree. At the time, I really didn't know what I would be allowed to do and what would be available to me. So I attempted to go to a university and register and begin the journey. But there's a question on the application that asks, have you been previously convicted of a felony? I checked yes, and of course I was not accepted at the time into the university. And for me, that was a very profound moment, because not only had I been sentenced to 120 months, which is 10 years in the federal system and 20 years in the state, $1.9 million in restitution at the age of 19. I was released 9 years and 2 months later at the age of 29. Now, a choice that I made at 19 was also denying me the right to education. So by default, I wasn't sentenced to a denial of education, but that's what was happening. So I began to work, and I worked for the next 2 years or so. I found out I was pregnant. Me and my husband, we got married, and I wanted to go back to school. So this time I said, okay, I'm going to try again. And this time I'm like, I'm not going to check yes. I'm going to check no, and I'm going to apply to the exact same institution and see if anything changes. Or are they focusing specifically on that question? So I got in. Same wow. information, same social security number, same name. The only difference of the application, same credits. The only difference with that particular application was I checked no instead of yes.
Right. So there was clear discrimination going on by the educational administration to keep people who have had previous criminal records out of being able to obtain higher degrees.
Yes.
To improve their lives and correct. To have the same opportunity, to have the same standard of life as anyone else who has a university or a college degree. What are some of the other barriers that you experienced after post-incarceration that you noticed?
Well, of course, one of the main barriers were the stigma associated with being a formerly incarcerated person. People assume, you know, imagination is allowed to run wild, you know, when they're trying to figure out what it was that you did to go to prison. Mm-hmm. I would always hear, oh my God, you don't look like someone who was in prison. You don't act like someone who was in prison. And I'm like, well, what does a person in prison look like? And of course, it's what you see on TV. Yeah. Or what society has cultivated to be shown as what they feel like incarceration looks like. You know, a lot of women that I was incarcerated with look like me.
Right.
They act like me. Right. They want better things out of life. So whether it was situations, choices that were made for whatever reasons that you ended up in prison, a lot of people, because they go to prison, aren't necessarily bad people. They just made wrong decisions. They made mistakes. Or they were in situations where they were abused, or they have traumatic instances that they haven't really dealt with. You know, people always say they want to work with at-risk youth, and we need to focus on the youth that are at risk. It's my belief and understanding from a personal experience that all youth are at risk if they don't deal with past events.
Right,
right. My mom was a judge.
Wow. Well, I want to get to that for sure. But did you, as a person, feel a stigma, like a personal stigma? Did you feel like you weren't as worthwhile, or were you ever embarrassed because of how society was prejudiced and discriminatory, and exhibiting this discrimination against you? Did it affect you personally from pursuing projects or initiatives that you wanted to participate in? Or, I mean, because and the reason I'm asking is because I think, you know, that I'm not sure about the word stigma when it comes to how society perceives people they think are not as important or valuable or human as they are. And I see it as real discrimination and prejudice more than stigma, because stigma is a mark of shame.
But when you're a formerly incarcerated person, you have a mark of shame because society places that upon you.
Other way around, do you feel shamed because of the mark that society placed on you?
I want to say no, but in some instances I would have to say yes. My no is, anyone who knows me knows that I think very highly of myself. I would never allow my past transgressions to determine what my future looks like. So anybody who knows that knows me. But I did find myself not speaking about a part of my life that lasted over 10 years. I did not feel that the circles that I had found myself in would be accepting to my situation. And also, I would be denied opportunities because of my situation. So the shame of the situation did stop me from being 100% forthright and honest when it came to, I guess, how I handled situations. And so in a way, it is, the shame was discriminatory from discrimination, but it's kind of like people don't necessarily start a conversation off with, I was abused at 5,
right?
Or I was raped, or, you know, whatever traumatic experiences that you're subject to,
mm-hmm.
You know?
You were about to say your mom was a judge?
Yes, she was. So that's why I believe when I say all youth are at risk if they don't deal with past issues. I was diagnosed with PTSD at 14 due to abusive situations that I was placed in at an early age. And that was never really dealt with, you know?
Can you elaborate on that, on the type of abuse you're talking about, if you're comfortable with that or you don't have to?
Well, yeah, no, I'm comfortable with it. It was physical and emotional abuse with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it really left a lasting impact on how I moved forward with my life. I was a very angry teenager. I used to get in a lot of fights, and it was because my PTSD was sentenced. We're talking about incarceration. But it was sensitive to raised voices and aggressive situations. So when someone would approach me in a loud and aggressive manner, I automatically would defend myself. Because as a young child and pubescent teenager, things of that sort, I couldn't defend myself. So when I got to a certain age where I was able to defend myself, I felt like if you were raising your voice or you were approaching me in an aggressive manner, and you may not have been being aggressive, but it was my perception of aggressive, I would defend myself. So because that particular incident was never dealt with, it caused me to make choices and decisions and stop caring and being angry. So it led me down the wrong road. Even though I was very intelligent, I had a full scholarship in physics and engineering, made good grades. I, you know, did science projects. I was third in the state in my, you know, senior year for my physics project. And it was just me not dealing with past issues chose me to make decisions that normally, if I had a healthy mind, I would not have made.
Right. Well, I have to say that when I met you the other night on Sunday night when you were tabling at Tulane University where they were screening the film, when I saw you, you struck me immediately as a very intelligent, smart, good-looking, very capable woman, and very assertive, not aggressive, not, you know, I mean assertive in a positive way, and, you know, and out there really doing everything you can to help women who have found themselves in less fortunate situations. And so I'd like to know more about the program that you started, the organization you started, and also, you know, your work. You have a son. You probably don't have a whole lot of extra time to, you know, really step back and enjoy your life the way other people might want to enjoy their lives, but you've really taken on a tragedy that happened to you, and you're doing something positive to make change in your world with it. And so talk about what your program looks like, how do people find out about it, who's it geared toward, and
how you again, doing with that? The name of the organization is Operation Restoration, and we focus on incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women and girls and helping them transition into society through higher education, specifically fields of healthcare, because that was my journey. So I know how to walk that particular journey. So I'm like anybody else who looks like me, wants to do the same thing that I do, I need to lay out this blueprint and help them walk through it, because what I feel like was the most important thing for me upon my release was I had two friends that I had met when I was in prison, and on day one when I got out, they were there. And they walked me through the how to use a cell phone, because I went to prison before the internet was accessible. Right. And upon my release, you know, there were smartphones and Google and the internet and emails.
It's fantastic that you just had that support immediately upon release, because I know when people are discharged from prisons, often, especially after having spent so much time, they do lose touch with technological advances and what, you know, even with their own, even with the landscape that they came from. They may go back to an old neighborhood or, you know, an area of a city that they were familiar with, and the whole landscape might have changed.
Well, yeah, so, I went to jail before Katrina as well. And then I got out and Katrina had happened.
Oh, my goodness.
So New Orleans, as I knew, didn't exist because I was incarcerated in prison. And all I kept saying was, I want a donut from McKenzie's, and I want to be able to go to Triangle Deli and get a stuffed bell pepper with macaroni and cheese.
Right.
And then I come to New Orleans because I went to the halfway house here, the federal halfway house here in New Orleans, and Triangle Deli didn't exist, and there wasn't a McKenzie's in sight. You know, Tasty Donuts was serving McKenzie's, Pettifors, and King Cakes, and I'm like, wait, what happened?
I know.
You know, and then everybody wants Krispy Kreme, and I'm like, who is that, and where did it come from? Like, yeah. I want a glazed donut from McKenzie's. That's what I want.
So, well, if you find one, let me know.
So, that was very hard. So without them, I felt like I would not have been able to make that transition. But a lot of women, what I saw while I was incarcerated, we would reach back and help one another. Mm-hmm. And that was very important to my transition. So I also belong to this National Council for Incarcerated and Former Incarcerated Women and Girls. Mm-hmm. And what it is it's women all over the United States and all of our organizations. And we have a listserv where we can type in and I can say, hey sisters, we have a woman who is coming to New York and she wants to know about education. Mm-hmm. And five people answer, okay sis, send her my way, you know. And it's a large, awesome network. We've been to, we hold council meetings in every city, and we've been to 13 cities to date. We also do these symposiums at the law schools. So we've done a symposium at Vanderbilt, at Yale, at Columbia, at Loyola here in New Orleans. And we just shed light on the issues that you face upon reentry. Like the issue that I talk about is my restitution and how it's the new life sentence, because my restitution is $1.9 million before I pay a bill, before I buy anything that my son needs. I have to concentrate on that first. So psychologically for me, it feels like it's rearranging Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and restitution becomes a survival. Because if you don't pay your restitution while you're on probation, you're threatened with prison. And once you're off probation, you're threatened with garnishments and of your checks or your tax returns or whatever. So before I do anything, I have to concentrate on restitution.
Is there any legislation or effort to help people with that, with the restitution problem? I mean, you know, there's of course we hear about student debt and how young adults who have incurred enormous amounts of debt, getting a college degree, have so much difficulty paying it back, which can then sort of lead them down a downward spiraling path as well. Which gets them into even more trouble and so on. So I hear that conversation going on. I don't hear any conversations going on about the problem of restitution for formerly incarcerated people and having to deal with so much with just getting your life back together, and then to have this added burden must be, I mean, obviously you've found a way to deal with it. It's probably exhausting, but I'm sure there are others who haven't, and right, they face penalties, mm-hmm. Which can, you know, really destroy, I think, a person's life, and mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly inhumane. Are there any efforts to try to
restoration reform? There have been a few attempts, and nothing has been successful. But I actually just applied last night. I did a letter of intent to the Soros mm-hmm. Justice Fellowship, and it's all about restitution.
Oh, wonderful.
Because it's a real issue. A lot of people, anybody sentenced under Criminal Code 18 USC is subject to restitution, right. Can be given restitution. And you just hear story after story of people who have been sentenced to obscene amounts of restitution mm-hmm. in addition to their prison sentences.
Mm-hmm. And parole.
And it's just, it's amazing to me. The United States of America has $40 billion of uncollected restitution. $40 billion of uncollected restitution. And it's crazy because it's like an average person in their lifetime
yeah.
is only gonna amass so much or make a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
So not only did you sentence me to my prison time, you sentenced me to this restitution. So effectively, you are in my life forever.
It's a life sentence, no matter which way you look at it.
No matter which way you look at it. And these life sentences are being issued out for, mine was property damage. Mine didn't even have a victim. A human being was not even involved. And was I wrong? Of course. And that's another driving factor for me to pay my restitution every month, because for the last, I was sentenced in 2000, so you pay while you're incarcerated. Mm-hmm. It's 2016, so every month for the last 16 years, I've made restitution payments. But I have no relief from it. You can't file bankruptcy and get discharged.
That's what I'm wondering with. No. There's no relief now.
No, it's called the Victims Restitution Act of 1996.
Okay.
So it effectively eliminates any type of, you know, we bail out financial institutions.
Sure. Oh, don't even get me started on that.
You have loan forgiveness if you go into certain professions.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's amazing what the wealthy and powerful get away with that no average citizen would ever be able to, you know, to equal.
No.
But we just have a couple of minutes okay. left, but I'd like to know more about how do people get involved with what you're doing? If somebody knows somebody that is formerly incarcerated, a formerly incarcerated woman, how would they reach out?
I have a website. It's www.theoperationrestoration.com. You can go on that website, you can sign up, you can email, you can call, and you can also get information about things that are going on, places will be. But my biggest effort right now is getting the women inside of prison and outside of prison education. So I believe that through education, you can effectively change your life. You can obtain a career versus a job and have a sustainable life. Right now, I'm designing a lab assistant program with Tulane to go inside of LCIW, the prison, women's prison here in Louisiana, and teach them lab assistant skills. Mm-hmm. Again, it's personal. That's what I started with, the lab assistant. And I was able to get my lab assistant license even though I was formerly incarcerated. And once I have my lab assistant license, I am able to then transition into higher fields from the Louisiana State Board of Medical Examiners. So I had to do like an 18-month probation, get my license free and clear, and then I was able to upgrade to other higher paying professions that I decided that I wanted to be a part of through my educational journey. So I'm a medical technologist right now, and I just recently started a new position as a lab support services supervisor. So it is my hope that when my sisters get this lab assistant license and they're on their way out of prison, they can come and interview with me. And they won't have to worry about the stigma and the shame and how they feel. And if they're truly qualified and they have done everything they need to do, that I can offer them the olive branch of their first job.
That's an amazing story, and you're absolutely a testament to what a person can do with their lives if they have the opportunity to do it. And not only get an education, but start your own organization, which yeah. isn't easy either, right?
No, it's not.
But there's a process to that. And so even if a person didn't want to get a higher degree, there are certainly opportunities to get involved in other ways. and build a career in other ways as well. So I really appreciate you spending the time with us this morning to share your experience and your story. And come back anytime you like. Let's definitely keep in touch and let us know how things go moving forward and how your organization progresses. And
yeah, we'll definitely keep in touch.
Bring some of your sisters in next time.
Yes, I definitely will.